Chapter 3. In Court. She went the usual way to the Royal Courts of Justice with a briefcase in one hand and an umbrella in the other. The morning was grey and dull, and the city air felt cool against her cheeks. She nodded to the friendly doorman as she left the apartments and hoped that she did not look like a woman whose world had just turned upside down. She avoided thinking about Jack by playing a piece of piano music she knew in her head. She imagined herself as the pianist that she could never become, performing Bach perfectly. Rain had fallen for most days of the summer. The trees were full of it, and the streets were wet and smooth. The cars on High Holborn were showroom shiny and clean, and the Thames River was dark brown and angry as it rose against the bridges. Everyone pushed forward along the pavements, determined and wet. By the time she got to Chancery Lane, the rain was coming down harder, driven by a cold wind. It was darker now, and a shower of drops flew from a car's wheels against her legs. She was playing a slow piece of music in her mind now, but there was no escape because it led her straight to a memory of Jack. She had learned it as a birthday present for him last April. She remembered him drinking cold white wine and shouting with joy as she'd played it, and their long kiss at the end after they'd touched their glasses together. But then the engine of self-pity began to turn, and helplessly she remembered all the kind things that she had done for him. The list was very long. There were surprise visits to the theatre, carefully planned trips to Paris and Dubrovnik, Vienna and Rome. Jack, knowing nothing, was told to pack a small bag and passport and meet her at the airport straight from work. And so many thoughtful presents. Special boots from America, a rare bottle of whiskey, books about exploring. She felt sad then, and knew that her real anger was still ahead. She was an abandoned 59-year-old woman taking her first steps into the beginning of old age. She made herself think of a different piece again as she turned into the narrow road that led her to Lincoln's Inn. Over the drumming of the rain, she heard Bach's gentle piano still playing in her head. The music was lovely, and she felt it had some clear human meaning, or perhaps it was just about love in its biggest, largest form for all people. For children, perhaps. Johann Sebastian Bach had 20 of them from two marriages. She wondered then if her own childlessness was a flight from the journey she had been meant to take. Had she failed to become a woman, as her mother understood that word? How she had come to this place was the story of a long journey of many years, a story of the idea of children appearing, then pulling back, then appearing again, of shock and sometimes worry as the years when she was able to have children went by and then were gone, and she was almost too busy to notice. After her final exams, she'd started work as a lawyer and had enjoyed some early success. It had seemed reasonable to delay having a child until her 30s, but when those years came, they brought more difficult, important cases and more success. Jack was also not sure, arguing to wait for another year while he was teaching in Pittsburgh. At the same time, she was working a 14-hour day, moving deeper into family law while the idea of her own family began to disappear, despite the regular visits of nephews and nieces. Then came talk of Fiona being made a judge, and in her 40s, the worry of being an older mother and that it might cause problems for the health of their child. And then one day, when she was sworn in by the Lord Chief Justice, she knew that it was never going to happen. She belonged to the law. She crossed Carey Street and walked up the steps to the Courts of Justice on the Strand, through the corridors and up the stairs until she reached her office. Nigel Pawling, quiet and always correct, was leaning over her desk and putting out documents. They asked about each other's weekends, and she said that hers was quiet as she gave him the corrected draft of the Bernstein judgment. They talked about the day's cases. In the Moroccan case, listed for 10 o'clock, she learned that the little girl had been taken to Rabat by the father despite his promises to the court. The mother, who was very upset, would be in court today, and Fiona would apply, through the Hague Convention, to get the child returned as soon as possible. The papers for the Jehovah's Witness case were on her desk. The boy had a very rare type of leukemia, Pauling told her. Let's give him a name, she said sharply, and her voice surprised her. Of course, my lady. Adam. Adam Henry, Pauling replied. The parents are Kevin and Naomi. Mr. Henry runs a small digging company. Adam is their only child. After 20 minutes, she walked along the corridor to the coffee machine and made herself a strong cup of cappuccino from fresh beans. Then she suddenly pulled her phone from her bag and rang a business number, giving orders for a change of lock. New keys should be delivered to her office today, Fiona said, and nowhere else. There must be a price for Jack leaving her, and here it was. She would not allow him to have two addresses. The court rose for her at 10 o'clock. She listened to the lawyer of the unhappy mother who wanted to get her daughter back. When the father's lawyer started to speak, she cut him off with her hand. I'm surprised your face isn't red from embarrassment because of what your client has done, she said quickly. When the court rose, Fiona knew that she would never see the mother again. The case would go before a Moroccan judge. Next, she heard the case of a woman who needed money from her husband for her children ahead of their divorce. She listened, she asked questions, she ruled for the mother. At lunch, Fiona wanted to be alone. Pauling brought her sandwiches and a bar of chocolate to eat at her desk. Her phone lay under some papers. At last, she gave in and looked at it for texts or missed calls. Nothing. She told herself she didn't feel anything. She drank tea and read a newspaper for 10 minutes. There was a story about the war in Syria, reports and terrible photographs. The government were killing ordinary people. An 8-year-old boy lay on a bed, missing a leg. There were more unhappy cases that afternoon. She ruled against a woman who wanted her husband out of the family home, then listened to a man who was worried about being attacked by his ex-wife's boyfriend. Back at her desk at 5:45, and Pauling came in to tell her that media interest in the Jehovah's Witness case was strong. Most of tomorrow morning's papers would carry the story. Then Fiona's new keys arrived in a brown envelope, opening her way to a changed life. Half an hour later, she set off towards home, but she did not go there directly because she did not want to enter the empty apartment. She walked west on the Strand instead, then went north along Kingsway. The sky was a dark grey and she no longer noticed the rain. The Monday traffic was lighter than usual. She turned east, crossed High Holborn, and then went west again past cafes, hairdressers, and small art shops, still not wanting to return. When she passed a key-cutting shop, her heart began to race as she imagined Jack shouting at her, face to face, under the square's dripping trees, while the neighbours looked on from their windows. She knew that she was in the wrong. But when she finally reached the apartment, coming home wasn't so difficult. She was used to getting back before Jack, and she felt relaxed as she closed the door and went to the kitchen. She put down her bag and listened to the silence. Then she went through the rooms, turning on the lights, although it was only 7:30. She took her papers from her briefcase and read through the next day's submissions while she made some tea. She could have phoned one of three friends, but she could not bear to explain her situation and make it real. It was too soon for sympathy or advice. Instead, she spent the evening feeling nothing. She ate cheese and biscuits, and then sat at the piano and played Bach. It made her think about a colleague of hers, Mark Berner, who sometimes played with her. He was representing the hospital in the Jehovah's Witness case the next day. The next concert they would play together was at Christmas, but she decided to practice some of the pieces now. When she finally rose, her body was stiff. In the bathroom, she swallowed a sleeping pill, and 20 minutes later she was in bed, her body folded in a troubled sleep.